Welcome to Know Your Risk Radio on 97.3 Cairo FM and AM 770 KTTH. Know Your Risk Radio is hosted by Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Know Your Risk Radio is brought to you by Bulwark Capital, helping families navigate the ever-changing and often volatile markets. Know Your Risk Radio starts now. Here's your host, Zach Abraham.
And we are back. Thank you so much for joining us for yet another of the most scintillating hours in finance radio. And I really mean it this week. We have got a hot punch list of things to discuss. And I am going, what you're going to notice, hopefully, this is the goal. What you're going to notice from me this week or on this show, I'm going to try to keep things more concise because we have so much to get to. This is one of those shows where I do really wish we had 3 hours. And it's very important stuff. If you have your money managed with us, if you're a client of Bulwark, if you do it on your own, if you have it managed somewhere else, this pertains to all of you, all of us. And it's fascinating. Right, we're going to talk about the Fed meeting and how I think it's the most incredible, incredulous, disingenuous Fed meeting I've ever heard. And I'm not talking about the conclusion. I'm not talking about the rate decision. I'm talking about what was said. And it's not just me. It's got a lot of people scratching their head. It's unlike any other Fed meeting I've ever witnessed. And I think that there's some information in there, right? I think it tells us something, and it tells us something that we've been teasing for years. It tells us something that we were pounding on the table about a year and a half ago. And again, as always, when I tell you these things, I did a whole show once about all of my biggest investment mistakes. We are not those guys that are going to get on here and just tell you about the wins. I wish that was all we had, but we don't. So when you hear me talking about getting something right, one of the reasons it's so fascinating to me is to go counter to a body like the Fed, to disagree with them, considering the limited amount of information and contacts I have compared to them, and to get it completely right when they get it completely wrong. Again, it's not a brag. I've gotten plenty wrong. What I think it goes to, and I think it's very important, is to understand there's either one of two things going on. The Fed either has no understanding about what's actually going on in the economy, or they're lying about it. Quite honestly, I think it's a mixture of the two. But we're obviously going to discuss that at length because this Fed presser was very important. What was said, what was not said was very important. And it's a big clue going forward, in my opinion. And it points to what we've been saying is that as frustrating as this is, as scary as this is, certain aspects. People go, what do you mean it's scary? Stock market's doing great. Yeah, things always look great right before they don't. But I don't mean that. Again, I'll repeat. This isn't about a bearish, you know, oh, everything's about to crash. I don't think that's going to happen. But cognitive dissonance is alive and well. And to hear some of these people dismiss the current environment and the debt loads and the deficits and all these kinds of things. I understand why they do, because you were right to dismiss all those things for the last 40 years. I just think people are not listening and paying attention to how far down the path we are. And I get it. I grew up in a house that was talking about the dollar collapse back in the early 80s. I remember finding a shoebox full of silver nickels and copper pennies and things like that. And so I think that, you know, because the debt levels are staggering. And they were staggering. I mean, they look small. You know, if you look back at like 1995, it looks small compared to today. But the number is still huge, right? Well, what I've learned over time is that debt really just debt does not work the same for a government, but debt always needs to be put in context, right? Somebody could tell you, well, yeah, they owe $4 billion. Well, if it's Apple and they got $400 billion in the bank, not really a concern, right? However, in the case of our U.S. government, we own 150% debt to GDP, meaning we owe 50% more in debt than the entire size of our economy. And yet, That does not mean our dollar or our economy are about to collapse. As a matter of fact, I don't think that's going to happen. Not yet. So this isn't about a bearish overview. It's more just analyze. The other thing that we've got to do, and we've talked about this a lot on the show. The other thing I want to do in this show is one of the things I'm convinced of is that the world changed in 08-09. Now, I think that change was already happening. And what am I referring to? That for the first time in history back in the 70s, and other governments did it at other times, but you know, we were the world reserve currency. When we went off the gold standard in 71, that was obviously a big moment. That was a big deal. But I think that it gets missed how big a deal that was, because for the first time in human history, you had a fully fiat currencies or around the world. I think you've had a few in the past. I don't really know of any major currencies, though, that were not backed or at least supposedly backed by hard assets, typically gold. But even if you think back to the Roman days, right, the whole term of coin clipping, that was a way to figure out whether, you know, to check to see if the coins were actually made out of real gold. So what does that tell you? Well, it tells you that they were in fiscal trouble and they ran their debts too high and all that other kind of stuff. But what it tells you is they were still backed by gold. They were just, that's why they were trying to fake it, right? So even in previous periods of inflationary collapse and currency collapse, you were still tied to an asset. And we all knew it's a big deal. We knew it was a big deal back then, but I think that we have reached the full maturity of that process. Meaning when you go off the gold standard, it takes a while for people's behavior to shift. And it actually took 40 years. When we went off the gold standard, we didn't start running 100%, you know, deficits that were 6% of the economy like we are now. We weren't paying off loans and putting out PPP loans and sending out, right? We weren't doing any of those things. That took place over a period of time. And I think the easiest way to think about it is think about people. Think about your kids, right? Your kid sneaks into the pantry and grabs a cookie one time and he's really, you know, I remember as a kid getting up at night, especially when you had a friend over, right? You get up at like 11 or 12 when you thought your parents were gone to bed, right? And you were supposed to be in bed and you wanted a snack. But part of the adventure was seeing if you could get up to the kitchen without getting detected, right? That was part of the mission, right? And you wanted to go get those snacks and you wanted to beat the man, right? You want to sneak past. Remember me and my buddy, his family had a security system and they didn't turn it on at night, but we pretended like they did. The motion detectors were going to pick us up, right? It's like a spy movie. This is like that in the sense that it shows a progression, meaning we didn't go off the gold standard and, you know, we were still tepid. We were still looking for, but after a while, and I remember in his case, this was true. After a while, we were best friends and the level of nervousness or the feeling of being spies, it dissipated over time because his parents never woke up. So pretty soon the game turned to us just walking up the stairs and raiding the kitchen, right? So we got normalized to it. And the same thing happens in all aspects of human behavior. And I think the exact same thing took place with us going off the gold standard. It took us until now. It took us until the last 15 years to really, quote unquote, take full advantage of that and to really have a mainstream thought being that debts and deficits don't matter, which is an entirely new theory. It's a ridiculous one in the long run. I think we all know that. The question is, right, for all of us, is what is the long run? Meaning if the pernicious aspects of this monetary policy, well, they're showing up now, right, by way of inflation. But if the pernicious aspects of this monetary policy don't fully emerge until 40 years from now, it's something that we're obviously concerned about, but it doesn't really apply to us. I think it's sooner than that. And I think that that's some of the keys and the clues that we got from the Fed this week. So anyway, I'm gonna preview that a little bit, and I'm gonna preview that in the next segment about one of the new theories floating around that higher interest rates could actually be feeding into inflation, which I teased earlier. But that's just gonna be a preview to the interview. And guys, if you're interested in this stuff, you're gonna want to hear this interview between Chase and I. explaining this theory because I think it's a perfect illustration of how the world has changed, that things do not work. I think a lot of the confusion out there is that we have gone full fiat. We went full fiat back in 71, but we weren't acting like it. Now we are. We've been acting like it for some time. And I think, again, it's like a frog in water. I just think we've been so normalized to it that we're not taking those, you know, steps back to get the whole perspective. And I think that's why so many historical economic indicators haven't worked, right? We have different inputs. The whole backdrop is different. So we're going to really dig into that and talk about, is it possible? Could higher interest rates actually be leading to higher inflation? And I'm really not doing this. None of these things are behind a paywall. I'm not doing this to drive this. I'm doing it because on the show format, the conversation is too deep and spans too big a spread to do it on a radio format. So I'm not trying to drive you guys to have to listen to it. We just need more time and less interruptions than the radio broadcast provides us. So anyway, let's get into the market update, though. Obviously, the most important thing, and like I said, we will go into this in greater detail in the next segment as a preview to my discussion with Chase Taylor, our head of research, about this. But the Fed meeting this week, it was very incredible. The two incredible aspects of it was what the inflation numbers are and what they have been, what the trend of those inflation numbers are, like where it's going, right? And then the flip side to it was the most incredible part of it, at least to me anyway, was how Powell positioned this, how Jay Powell positioned it, and how he effectively took interest rate hikes off the table, which is it's anathema, and not just to me. And here's why that's a big. So if you guys don't know, if you didn't, and most of you probably weren't sitting around watching the presser, but Powell basically came out and literally every single inflation indicator that the Fed has been talking about for the last 2 to 3 years, and really forever, is accelerating and accelerating quickly. Powell kind of tried to play it off like it was a short-term thing, and he may end up being right, right? We don't know what the future is. I will go back to saying, though, that judging by the Fed's record in terms of forecasting, you have to bet against him being right. I mean, the odds are not in his favor. Doesn't mean he can't be. But that's not the most important part of it. To understand monetary policy like the Fed, and I may be oversimplifying this, but again, I want you guys to understand the concept. Think of it as like a carrot and a stick. You ever seen those sticks? And I talked about this in the Daily Dots. The sticks that they use like in certain parts of Asia to like guide the oxen, right? They kind of tap him on his butt on both sides and kind of keep him in the middle, right? Monetary policy, theoretically, is sort of the same thing. But you got a carrot and a stick, right? The carrot being the carrot being the rate cuts, the stick being the rate increases. And the Fed wants to use those things to sort of keep the economy in the middle of the road, right? Not too hot, not too cold, just right. You know, like the Berenstein Bear. Was that Berenstein Bears? Who was that? I'm forgetting that. I'm too far removed from children's books. Anyway, got too much Fed, too much market on my mind. But that's sort of the way it works, right? You got to use the stick sometimes. You got to use the carrot. And literally every single inflation metric that Powell has been citing over the last 3 months has absolutely reaccelerated. And it's not nothing goes in a straight line, right? So if inflation was on a steady declining line, you wouldn't expect it to be steady. You'd expect to see sharp drops and then some pops and then another drop. And then a pop, but the trend line would be down, right? That's the way things work. Nothing really goes in straight lines. And the way Powell was presenting that was it was as if this was a pop in inflation, but if you drew a trend line, that pop just is kind of right up to that trend line. It didn't break it. We didn't change trend is what he left you believing. And it just could not be more. That's just completely false. For instance, you saw the biggest month-over-month jump in home prices that we've seen since 1990. Now, there is noise in home prices, so we can't take that all, right? Somewhat anecdotal. You also saw one of the biggest jumps in super core inflation, which is inflation less housing, fuel, and food costs. And that's one that the Fed has pounded the table for years on that's the most important. You saw that thing go from, shoot, I wish Chase was here right now. I want to say somewhere in the low twos to above, no. It was either low twos or low threes to above five. But my whole point is it's not inching back up and testing that trend line. It's blowing out through it. And Powell positioned it all like, well, this is just a bump on the road, but the trajectory still stays in place. And he cited year over year numbers and basically implied that that's what's important. Well, why is that a big deal? Because they've never talked year over year. It's always quarter to quarter, which with inflation, it makes total sense. Inflation is a rate of change. It's not an absolute number, right? So when you have 5% inflation, that means that prices are going up by 5%. If you go through a very big inflationary spell, like we have over the last 3 years, and inflation were to drop to zero, that doesn't mean that prices are coming down. It means they're not going up, right? So it's a rate of change. Well, with a rate of change, you need to be looking at that quarter by quarter basis if you're the Fed, because the economy can go to hell in a handbasket in a year, right? So it defies logic. It goes against everything they've ever said, everything Powell's ever reiterated. And it makes no sense on the face of it, other than you just want to cut. But here was the incredible thing, the fact that he basically said there are going to be no more hikes. And that was just mind-blowing, because you're battling inflation. Inflation is reaccelerating. Why would you take that off the table? That's the stick. And like I was joking around saying on the Daily Dots this week, he didn't throw the stick aside. He broke it over his knee. When the problem you are currently facing is reaccelerating, it just doesn't make any sense. And you know, I've really tried to give them the benefit of the doubt, but when you look at it in this light, it's really hard to come to any other conclusion other than that there's a political aspect to this. I don't disagree with their decision not to hike or not to cut and stay pat. I think that in this environment, right? Just period. I'm not talking about how we got here, not talking about what they should have done a year ago, but what should they do now? And I thought that they'd stay pat, and I thought they should stay pat, right? Stay where they are. So I'm not disagreeing with the decision, but it's not just the decision, right? Part of monetary policy is the reasons they give and the language they put around it. And the Fed has admitted that before, right? Like they want their talk to influence things. If they can influence markets in a way that they want without taking action just via talking, they'll do that. And it was just so he was moving the goalposts all over the place. Like Chase and I were laughing. He didn't move the goalposts. The goalposts are up in the cheap seats now. They're not even on the field. And the one thing he pointed to was one of the most meaningless economic metrics ever. It was the JOLTS data, or job openings data. Why is it meaningless? Because it's just not correlated. You'll see it all over. The job openings data looks horrible. This is going to be the beginning of a recession. And then 2 weeks later, the job data comes out, or a week later, the jobs data comes out. It blew it out. You've seen it over and over. So I'm not saying the JOLTS data is meaningless, but as an indicator of what's actually going on, it is, at least in this environment. And that's what you're pointing to? When every other inflation metric that you've told us for years and years is the most important, you're just going to disavow that because it's not doing what you want it to do. So what do we infer from that? I'm not sure. Chase and I will talk about this a little bit more in our discussion, in our interview today. But I will say this. I have never heard a Fed head step up there and say as many things that were total BS that I know he knows are BS. Why is he doing it? That's speculation. I don't know. But you kind of take that Occam's razor approach and you're like, I don't really understand any other reason why, unless the Fed is trying to, you know, prevent a Trump presidency or get in. Look, and for this is not a political show, right? So I'm not sitting there saying that it's wrong if the Fed doesn't want Donald Trump or they should want Donald Trump. I'm not saying anything like that. What I'm saying is the Fed is supposed to be apolitical, ideally, right? Now, no person is. And I had the hopes and maybe the naivete to believe that they at least attempted to do that. And maybe they do. Maybe he's got a different reason. Maybe he's really concerned about the economy slowing down drastically in the near future. I don't know why. That's not what any of the data is saying. But it's just, you know, I don't want to draw a conclusion, but it's really hard listening to the nonsense that he spewed from the podium the other day. To sit there and not think that there's a political aspect to it. I just can't see another angle. So I've already gone longer in this first segment. Gosh darn it. Another one that we had out, Apple earnings. That was interesting. Year-over-year revenues for Apple declined 4.4%. iPhone sales down 10, wearable sales down 10. There was really nothing good to point to except them pumping the AI-enabled phone. Now, maybe that'll be a big deal. I don't know. But what? Why'd the stock go up in the face of all that? Because they announced a $110 billion buyback. Here's my crazy market data for the day. Okay, the buyback that they announced, if they used a $110 billion buyback, they announced. Okay, now they're not obligated to do all that, and all the buybacks in the past they've done, they've never done the full headline amount. Okay, but even if they were to do the full headline amount, Apple's a $2.6 trillion company, right? So $110 billion deal would be about a, what would that be? It'd be like about a 3.5% repurchase of outstanding stock. So revenues down, profits down again in major, in their biggest segment, iPhone sales, revenues down year over year. And they announced they're going to buy back 3.5 to 4% of their stock. And that rallies the stock by 7.5%. Only in this market for a company that's not growing and hasn't been growing now for what? 2 years, I believe. I'd have to go back and check that, but I believe it's 2 years, two straight years of revenue declines or flat to negative revenue and profit. And it's still trading at 27 times earnings and it gets a 7.5-8% ramp off of news, off of more bad financial data and news that they could purchase up to 3.5 to 4% of the stock outstanding. Just doesn't make any sense. Not to mention the horrible allocation of capital it is. And I'll get into that a little bit in the next segment, but we got to take a break right here. But I want to, we've got another virtual roadshow coming up. If you're interested in what we do, how we do it, what active management means, and how we are properly diversifying our clients for a new horizon, right? The portfolio, and we're going to talk about this in another segment, in the third segment of the show, but the portfolios that, that retail investors have are prepared for the last 40 years, a deflationary, declining interest rate environment. You have never, and it's not just my opinion, it is a factual statement. If this inflationary period has anything similar to past inflationary periods, the average retail portfolio has never been more poorly positioned for that. And we'll get into that. But if you want to know how we're protecting our clients against that, which you should, because I think we're protecting our clients in a way that is going to offer more upside with substantially less risk, right? Risk management always being the name of the game. You're going to want to attend our free virtual roadshow happening May 30th at 3:30 p.m., 5:30 for the folks in Dallas. And you can do that by logging on to bulwarkcapitalmanagement.com. You sign up for it. It's free. It's about 45 minutes. We do a Q&A session afterwards. It's a great time. You won't want to miss it. Got to take a quick break. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Know Your Risk Radio podcast. Download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com.
This is Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham. Listen to Zach uncover the truth about the financial markets with simple and honest advice to help you plan for retirement. Get your free copy of Zach's new booklet, Common Sense Investing. Go to knowyourriskradio.com.
With the election looming, continued global unrest, rising cost of living, and this crazy market volatility, the rest of this year could be a wild ride. Protecting retirement portfolios with risk management is critical.
That's Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark and host of Know Your Risk Radio's podcast. Zach, at our first meeting, Bulwark opened my eyes to how exposed my portfolio really was.
We do that with everyone. Our Know Your Risk portfolio review is a great way to see if you're overexposed to risk. It's free and there's no obligation. In fact, we don't let anyone invest with us at our first meeting. Whether you become a client or not, I can promise you this, you'll leave much more informed about the risks to your retirement.
I know I did. Look, you only get one retirement. Don't risk it. Schedule your free risk review now at knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com.
Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance doesn't guarantee future results.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
And we're back. All right. Thanks for sticking with us. So let me tie this up real quick. So let me dig a little bit deeper into why I think this buyback is puzzling. Well, it's not puzzling. It just, Chase and I were discussing it earlier today, and he said something that I thought really resonated. And for those of you who've been listening to the show for a long time, you'll know what this means. Their announcement of a buyback felt very Boeing-esque. Why do I say that? Because they're a company that's not growing. The stock is trading at 27 times earnings, slightly above the average market, the market overall. Apple is contracting. The average company in the market, I think, is growing revenue at about 6 to 7% a year. So they're way worse than the average, yet they have a premium valuation, and they're going to – well, so why does that compete? What do you mean? Buybacks are great. Buffett's talked a lot about this, and I completely agree with him, and I think it's really hard not to agree with him. Buybacks should be treated just like any other type of investment, meaning the company should be buying back the stock when it's cheap. And there's a couple things that happen. First of all, when you do buybacks when the stock is cheap, like for instance, at some point in the last 2 years, Apple was down in the 120, 130 range. And I think that was having it trading around a 16, 17 price to earnings ratio, something like that, maybe a little more than that. Well, let's call it 17 to 20, somewhere in that range. Now, obviously, I'd like to buy back lower than that, but that makes some sense. Right? And the difference between buying, let's say you're buying at a 20 priced earnings or a 30 priced earnings, right? You get 33% more stock in your buyback. It's more productive. It soaks up more equity. Right? So I'm looking at Apple right now going, why would you be buying back your stock? Here's the other interesting part about it. It's a company that's effectively X growth. Now, maybe their AI Siri-enabled phone launches it. Call me a skeptic. Not a cynic, but a skeptic. I just don't think I have a light. I just don't see it driving things. One of the reasons why is one of Apple's biggest issues is the crackdown in China. It doesn't matter what they throw out there in terms of AI. I don't think it's going to impact Chinese sales. Now, maybe you make up for it in other places of the world. I just don't think it's going to be that big of a groundbreaker. Could be wrong. But when I hear them announce a $110 billion buyback, you know what I think? I think that they've got no – why aren't they investing? If AI is going to be such a big deal, why aren't they using most of that cash to invest in that? And they've got enough cash on hand. They can do both. Wait till the stock price to get lower. If I was Tim Cook, I would have said, look, we're going to authorize a buyback, but we're also investing. We're going to invest in this. We're going to invest in that. We're sitting on a bunch of cash. Let's make it productive. We're getting harder into AI. We're doing these things. And this buyback right here, if the stock drops at all, we're going to be buying it back hand over fist. And I think by doing that, you could accomplish a lot of the same things, but just have a much better allocation of capital. I'm sitting there thinking about Apple investing in other businesses or investing in other products and things like that. As a shareholder with the stock at this price, I would much rather have them do that. You're going to use $110 billion to buy back your stock at 27 times earnings or higher? I don't get it. And that's why it feels Boeing-esque. It feels like a move that is simply about trying to gin the stock of the price up or the price of the stock up, especially in this environment, because if you say the word buyback, everybody loses their mind. Which I'm not saying buybacks are bad. I'm not one of those guys that believes that. If a company wants to buy back their stock at any price, they should be allowed to. I just miss the days where the market held them accountable. What I'm really interested to see, though, is what Buffett thinks of this. Because Buffett's talked a lot about this, how he disdains buybacks when stocks are expensive. And I'm really interested to see if his holdings in Apple change materially. Judging from him in the past, I don't know. He's just got so much more look through. He's probably talked to Cook. If I was Cook, I don't think I would have, I don't know if I, maybe he can't talk to Buffett about it. Maybe that's considered inside information. I don't know. Maybe there's restrictions on that. But if I was Cook, I wouldn't announce a $110 billion buyback without talking to Buffett. Pretty good source information. So it'll be curious to see when Berkshire's positions get released, what is that? Was it 10Qs? No, 13Fs. When the 13Fs come out, which tells you what they've got in their portfolio, what's changed, what's been bought, what's been sold. It'll be really interesting to see what he does. Another one I got for you, quote of the week. This is just pure comedy. Robert Kaplan, who was the head of the Dallas Fed. He's since retired from the Fed. I'm not sure what he's doing now. But he was getting interviewed this week, and they were talking about the inflation problems. And I'm paraphrasing. I should have written down the exact quote, but this is very close. If this isn't the exact quote right on the money, it's very close to it. He said, quote unquote, one of the things that we need to do to slow down inflation is we need to slow down the spending of the capital in the Inflation Reduction Act. See, what we said from the very beginning, a massive spending bill like that called the Inflation Reduction Act to bring down inflation. We need to stop the Inflation Reduction Act. I thought that was so funny. And the reason why I think that's so funny is it's ridiculous on the face of it, but it also reflects how nonsensical things have gotten, right? It in my opinion, it reflects the idiocy of current government fiscal policy and monetary policy. It reflects the Peter Pan, you know, the Peter Pan nature, the Wonderland nature of like how fake so much, how contrived so much of this is, that our Inflation Reduction Act. It also reflects the ridiculous, you know, massaging of words that come out of DC. It incorporates the magical thinking of the woke stuff. That was a knee slapper for me. Maybe it's not as funny to you. And of course, we all knew this, right? That's like saying, hey, hand me that can of gasoline so I can put out this fire. So that was just rich. The other one, did you guys see little? So for all you Bulwark clients out there, your money inadvertently did something this week. We made it. Did you see that? If you saw the video, the guys on the campus, there was a group of frat guys that stood around the American flag. Was that at Columbia? Anyway, one of the schools. I'm forgetting which. And they were standing around protecting the American flag, protecting it from getting torn down and burned, which most people who love this country should be in favor of. I've got a lot of respect for the flag. Represents those that have fallen for us, right? The red is the blood. So anyway, there was a GoFundMe put up for these guys to throw them an awesome party. And I think they raised like $150,000 for these guys. But I kicked in on behalf of our Bulwark clients. I threw $250 into the pot for those guys so they could have a few beverages on us, if they're of age, of course, and a good meal. And I just, it was one of those things that made me smile. They weren't confrontational. They weren't violent. It was just a breath of fresh air, you know, seeing some young people standing up and taking a stand and protecting something. And I think a lot of us could appreciate that. So that was made on behalf of Bulwark clients. And so we are assisting in their big patriotic party. So there's that. All right. Well, you know what? We're going to take a quick break here, but I want to plug this again. Our virtual roadshow coming up May 30th at 3:30 p.m., 5:30 for those of you in Dallas. It is free of charge. We run you through what our process looks like. Okay. What do we mean by active management? How do we limit risk? And we're also going to show you how important we believe it is at present to have a remade portfolio that reflects an inflationary and higher interest rate outlook, because all of your portfolios are built on modern portfolio theory, which has all been based on the last 40 years and declining interest rates. And it isn't just me. And I'm going to do a segment coming up next about other people, fairly prominent people in the industry, saying the exact same thing, which is the average retail portfolio, for a variety of reasons, has never been in a worse position to endure an inflationary environment. It doesn't mean that everything needs to go and it needs to be fully remade, but the composition of the portfolio, if it's going to work going forward, if you believe inflation is a specter that is going to haunt this economy for some time, which I think when you look at all of the available data, I think it's very hard to make an argument that that's not the case. As a matter of fact, I feel pretty confident saying we have made a turn. We are in an inflationary environment and we're going to continue to be, and we're going to see it go up and we're going to see it go down. Similar to the 70s, it's different. It's not just like the 70s. There are a lot of different things in play, a lot of different components. But, you know, when this whole inflationary thing started, we were telling you, look, I think that the Fed is way overestimating how and why is that? Because inflation's like whack-a-mole. It's hard to kill. I've referred to it as like the economic vampire. It's just hard to kill. And there's a ton of different reasons for that. Part of it's behavioral, right? A behavioral shift happens and people get concerned about higher prices in the future. And so it alters their behavior. The other thing is just like deflationary cycles, it has a self-reinforcing aspect to it, meaning it feeds on itself. But there's a lot of different aspects to inflation. And the modern portfolio could not be worse positioned. And what do I mean by that? We'll get into this a little bit more in the next segment when I discuss this. But it really is just a factor of what has worked in periods of inflation in the past, what has worked, what has protected portfolios, what are the assets that have performed the best, right? So we're going to show you in this virtual roadshow how we are protecting our clients, how it's worked in the past, what you need in your portfolio, and how you currently don't have it. We're going to prove it to you. Just lay it out. And the great thing is it doesn't obligate you to anything, guys. We're not going to put you on a call list. Keep calling. You go to the virtual roadshow, okay? If you do not tell us that you want to talk to us or you want to be contacted by somebody, they're not going to bug you. It's not what we do. We're looking for partners. We're not salespeople, right? This is a partnership. And it really is. We're fiduciaries. So when we're managing our clients' accounts, we don't make, you know, trade costs and commissions on those trades. We make a percentage. What does that mean? That what's good for you is good for us. We're partners. It's a partnership. So anyway, you're going to want to go to that virtual roadshow. And if you're sitting there looking at it and going, look, I want to actually talk to somebody one-on-ones. I've been listening to you guys for a while and I realize what you're saying. I'm looking at my portfolio. There's nothing in there that is inflationary protection. It's got me worried. What do I do? Call us. 866-779-RISK. Again, no obligation. Here's what we do. First meeting, I'll just tell you how it works. First meeting, we review your portfolio, tell you if it fits that metric. I'm not lying to you. We have looked at other portfolios and said, you know what? This is pretty well positioned. People look at you kind of weird and you're like, look, I think we could do a little better? Sure. And I'm biased though. It's my firm, but we're not going to sit there and lie to you just to get your business. Again, we're looking for partners. And I'm just a big believer of do the right thing. The business side of it will take care of itself. And that's been the story of Bulwark. That's how we've grown to managing, you know, right around $700 million now. Maybe we're over that. Do the right thing. Business side will take care of itself. So it's all about information, looking at your individual situation and saying, look, here's what you need. Here's what you don't have. So we get that in the first meeting. Second meeting, we bring some examples of what we think we could do to help you out, get some more information from you. And a third meeting, if we get that far, we make the portfolio presentation to you and say, look, if you move your money to us, this is what we do. This is what it would cost. And here's how we think it's going to improve your outcomes. And then we give it to you. And then tell you, hey, if you want to move forward, give us a call. If not, best of luck and hope everything works out. No obligation, no cost. Give us a call, 866-779-RISK. And it should interest you. It was crazy. Everybody's talking about inflation. Then you look at their underlying portfolio and it's got no protection. None. Or record little amounts. And the most frustrating part is everybody in the industry knows that you need to be diversified, not overly diversified. Right? Because you can take that to an extreme too. But don't you think you should have some things in your portfolio that'll protect you from inflation? And here's the catch. They're all still really cheap. Most of those things are trading at a fraction of the overall market valuation. So not only are they going to give us inflation protection and potentially a lot of upside. Remember, like I've said, during the 70s, the stock market and bonds were a nightmare. But if you were in commodities and inflationary assets, you crushed it. Gold went from 35 to 850. Silver got up to, I think, $50. Oil 10x'd. You crushed it. Now, obviously, you're not going to go all into those things because we need to stay diversified. And there are good companies that can work in inflationary environments. Don't put all of our eggs in one basket. But I know so many people are concerned with inflation. Then I look at their portfolio. They're running around talking about it. They're talking about how pernicious it is and how it's burning a hole in their pocket. Then you look at their portfolio, and it's just the same as it ever was. They got their bonds in there. They got all their tech stocks. They got their never sell apples. Even though you're looking at Apple right now, and I just told you it ain't the darling it was. It's just not. There's a better way, guys. Educate yourselves. Take what could be a devastating impact, and let's position you to A, insulate you from that devastating impact, and B, put you in a position where you can potentially benefit from that negative outcome, right? Those higher, longer inflation rates for longer periods of time. So if that interests you, which it should, give us a call, 866-779-RISK, and 866-779-RISK. Going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio podcast. Download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com.
This is Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham. Listen to Zach discuss key investment strategies across several asset classes, not just stocks and bonds. Get your free copy of Zach's new booklet, Common Sense Investing. Go to knowyourriskradio.com.
With the election looming, continued global unrest, rising cost of living, and this crazy market volatility, the rest of this year could be a wild ride. Protecting retirement portfolios with risk management is critical.
That's Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark and host of Know Your Risk Radio's podcast. Zach, at our first meeting, Bulwark opened my eyes to how exposed my portfolio really was.
We do that with everyone. Our Know Your Risk portfolio review is a great way to see if you're overexposed to risk. It's free and there's no obligation. In fact, we don't let anyone invest with us at our first meeting. Whether you become a client or not, I can promise you this, you'll leave much more informed about the risks to your retirement.
I know I did. Look, you only get one retirement, so don't risk it. Schedule your free risk review now at knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com.
Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance doesn't guarantee future results.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
And we are back. Okay, I'm going to try to keep this concise, but I realize I'm just a voice hollering at you on the radio that you've never known. But there's a guy that I follow on Twitter, very sharp guy, was a portfolio manager at Bridgewater and now runs his own hedge fund. And he's named Bob Elliott. Goes by the handle of Bob Unlimited on Twitter. And I like him for a couple reasons. Probably going to look into getting him on the show here pretty soon. If he'll have us, of course. Which, if you want guys like that on the show, subscribe to the podcast. More subscribers we get, easier it is to land guys. But anyway, you guys know me. I like workhorses, not show horses, right? And so many of these guys on Twitter are always... Oh, you know, if you listen to their feed, they've never lost a dime. They're the only one that has these markets figured out. And if you don't do what they say, you're going to be lost forever, which is a joke, right? It still blows me away that people listen to that. They're still looking for their shaman, right? He doesn't exist, right? Especially in this market. But Bob comes at things in a very data-dependent way. And he's very sharp, very educated on macroeconomics and portfolio management and things like this. And I heard him on a podcast recently. He was actually talking to Andreas Steno Larsson, a friend of the show. We've had him on multiple times. Very sharp guy that runs a macro economic research company out of, is it Finland? Anyway, somewhere over there in Europe. I think it's either Sweden or Finland. No, it's somewhere else because he just bought a, where is it? Anyway, but great guy. He had him on his podcast. And they were talking about the inflationary environment. And I bring this up just so you know, like I said, so you know I'm not some random guy just screaming into the microphone. And they did pretty much an entire show talking about this topic of inflation, how it is here to stay, and how portfolios are so poorly positioned for it, and how people are, in our opinion, again, based on historical periods of inflation that we've experienced in the past, that when you look at the composition of these portfolios, it appears that retail investors are walking right into a buzzsaw. And the pernicious part about this, guys, is that, like I was saying earlier, there isn't a warning sign, right? You go back and look at, and that's the story of inflation. There are panic periods and then there are false dawns. And that's the killer, is that, and you're seeing it happen. You could argue that it's been happening for the last 2.5 years. The stock market is relatively flat. I think it's up 6%, 6.5% over the last 2.5 years. So you could make an argument that you're kind of already doing that, right? And when you understand the nature of inflation, it's not surprising that markets do that. But like I said, it's one of those tough parts because, you know, when COVID hit or when 2022 hit, you know, and things started tanking and you heard guys like me on the radio explaining why and you know, we didn't get hit much at all in either of those scenarios. But those kind of shock scenarios are oftentimes what wakes investors up to the realization that things have changed. One of the most pernicious parts about inflation is that it just kind of robs you slowly over time. You don't have these dramatic drops that wake people up, right? You just get to the end of 8-10 years and you think you've gotten through the worst of it and there's a false dawn and you're like, okay, things are getting better. And then you get hit again. And then you get to the end of 15 years, and you go, oh my gosh, I haven't grown. And yet the cost of everything has gone up exponentially, right? And what he was saying was the exact same thing on this podcast with our friend Andreas Stino Larsson. He was saying that, look, one of the things that bothers me the most is the average portfolio is more ill-prepared for this period of inflation than any other time in history. Why is that? Because one of the biggest reasons is the success of index investing, right? And the reason why that is when you buy an index, you are putting the majority of your money into the top stocks in that index, which makes those stocks even a bigger percentage of the index, which means when you put more money in a month later, even more of your money is going to those top stocks. So you get to a point now where you're investing in what you think is a diversified index, the S&P 500, and really it's a tech fund. 40% of your holdings are in the top seven companies, top seven, top 10. But either way, out of 500, right? Then we look at things like metals, we look at natural resources, we look at oil, nat gas, copper, all these different things. And because of this run up, because of so much money being concentrated in these few companies at the top, which has happened because A, they've been very successful companies, but B, it's been greatly aided by the revolution of ETFs. Because of that dynamic, when you look at the S&P 500 or you look at the NASDAQ, you look at all these other indexes, they're all tech funds. That's all you got. You have record low exposure to nat gas, close to record low exposure to nat gas and oil. I believe you've got record low exposure to gold, silver miners. I don't even know if there are any gold miners in the S&P 500 anymore. There's got to be one or two. But anyway, record low representation, record, you know, across the board. So maybe your theory is that you think the inflation's going to evaporate. Maybe your theory is that those things that have always appreciated during inflationary times won't for some reason. And I can't tell you, I know you're unequivocally wrong. What I can say is that if I step up here in front of on a show and tell you, you need a greater level of diversification, every professional investor is going to agree with me. But then if I tell you that diversification is including gold, everybody, oh, no. Why? Because it hasn't worked for 15 years. That's what always happens. That's why people get run over by the market, because they make the changes once the reality is realized, right? Investing is all about looking out to the next 18 months. And what's so intriguing about this setup to me is not only do I think it's great protection, I think there's phenomenal profit opportunities. Why do I think that? Because not only are these going to be the things that you need, and the things that have historically protected you in inflationary times, they also happen to be some of the cheapest stuff floating around the market. So you're checking both boxes, right? You're getting your inflation play. You're getting a lot of them are spitting off nice income and dividend streams. And you're also buying cheap. One of Buffett's biggest purchase over the last several years has been Occidental Petroleum. He sees it. He's buying it because it's cheap. And it still is. And all that stuff still is. And that's part of risk management. Don't be like, think about it. Risk management. You all want that if we're close to retirement, right? Especially in these crazy times. One of the main basic elementary first grade tenets of risk management is diversification, and you're not. We, like I said earlier, we all know we're in an inflationary time, and yet we look at our portfolio. Why aren't you making any moves? Well, because it's worked. Yeah, it's worked because you've had all this stimulus and declining interest rates. All those things are coming to an end. Why? Because we've transitioned to an inflationary environment. Do you need somebody to show up on your front door and tell you that your portfolio composition should change? Well, if you do, that's what I'm doing right now. I'm knocking on your front door. Wake up. And this is not a controversial thing. I'm not promising that this is going to deliver riches. What I'm saying is, look at the world. Do you think you need parts of your portfolio that are inflation protected? I don't think that's a crazy hyperbolic statement to make. If you do, give us a call. 866-779-RISK and 866-779-RISK. Go to bulwarkcapitalmanagement.com. Sign up for the virtual roadshow that's happening on May 30th at 3:30 p.m., 5:30 for the folks in Dallas. Or you can call us now, talk to one of our advisors or talk to me. And again, guys, we don't twist arms. We're looking for partners. We're looking for long-term partners. We're looking for people that buy into this risk management philosophy, which everybody should, especially those in retirement. But we'll walk you through it. And if we can't help you or we think that somebody's doing a good job, we'll tell you. And then we'll leave you with our portfolio recommendation and tell you, look, let us know if you want to proceed. If not, best of luck. You can have this. No secret sauce. Here it is. And we'll explain to you what our active management means. That's another thing. I think active management should be pretty attractive. Again, looking at past. You look at the 70s. If you were an active manager, you could have done really well. You rode the ups, got out, missed some of the downs, had some commodities in there. You went from it being a devastating outcome to a good one. But it takes planning and it takes having the right stuff. So give us a call, 866-779-RISK and 866-779-RISK. Don't miss the interview with Chase Taylor where we go over this new theory about higher interest rates feeding into inflation. You're not going to want to miss it. It's coming out this weekend right along with the show. We'll see you next week and do not miss the interview. Until next week, you're listening to Know Your Risk Radio podcast. Download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com.
Thanks for listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Schedule your free risk review with Zach Abraham now at knowyourriskradio.com. Zach will be back with more Know Your Risk Radio next Saturday at noon on 97.3 Cairo FM and AM 770 KTTH.
The opinions expressed in this program are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Investment advice cannot be given without a client service agreement. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Trek Financial, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor.